Tune is like this.
Someone can just like play a. We had a drum there, but nobody plays a drum. You can clap at least so we get a rhythm. Everybody knows how to clap.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Namacharya Shila Haridas Thakur Vijaya Premse Goho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Garata Sarasi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Kijaya Shri Shri Radha Krishna Govardhana Sayam Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Kijaya Vrindavan Kijaya Macharadam Kijaya Navadiptam Kijaya Jagavata Sami Kijaya Namai Kijaya Shrimati Lasidevi Kijaya, Samaveda Bhakta Vrindi Kijaya, Gaur Premananda Kijaya. All glorious is some of the devotees, all glorious is some of the devotees, all glorious is some of the devotees, all glorious to Shri Guru and Gauranga Shri Prabhupada Kijaya. Okay, so first I'll read it. Translation to this prayer written by Narottama Das Thakur. This is a very wonderful prayer. In this material world which is progressing towards hell, there is always a blazing fire and everyone is struggling hard without finding peace. Therefore, if the world wants to have real peace, it should take shelter under the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda, which are cooling like the shining of millions of moons. Unless one takes shelter under the shade of the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda, it will be very difficult to approach Radha and Krishna. Anyone who does not establish their relationship with Lord Nityananda is simply spoiling their boon of a human birth and the animal propensities of sense gratification. Never saying the names of Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya, they become absorbed in so-called material enjoyment, and their academic education and birth in a high family or great nation will not protect them at the time of death. They become maddened by a false concept of bodily life, and thus they have forgotten their eternal relationship with Lord Nityananda. Such forgetful persons accept the illusory energy as factual. When you achieve the mercy of Lord Nityananda, then you will be able to approach Radha and Krishna. Firmly catch hold of the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda. The lotus feet of Lord Nityananda are not illusion. They are fact. And anyone who engages in the transcendental loving service of Lord Nityananda immediately achieves their transcendental position on a spiritual platform which is eternal and blissful. Therefore, always try to catch the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda. Narottama Das Thakur says, "My dear Lord Nityananda, I am very unhappy. So I am praying to you to make me happy. Please keep me in a corner of your lotus feet." So today, of course, Lord Nityananda's appearance. I just want to comment on one aspect of the translation here. He says that anyone who engages in the transcendental loving service of Lord Nityananda immediately achieves their transcendental position on the spiritual platform. Think about that for a second. Of course, generally in our Vaishnava Sampradaya, we have this method of achieving one's transcendental position on the spiritual platform, which is to be told, or to actually have the spiritual master verify your particular attraction to a particular service resident of Vrindavan, Ragatmaka Bhakta, and then you engage in the contemplation of what's called your Akadasa Bhava, in other words, the eight elements of your emotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, you realize you're Siddhadeya, and then
you go through, but as we talked about the other day, we talked about this the other day, the first step is to meditate on your siddha deha. Siddha deha means perfect body. Not that you have your perfect body, or you realize it at that time, but you meditate on your perfect body as your mandri, or a cow, or a dog, or a cockroach, or something in the spiritual world. I don't know who those who become cockroaches meditate on in the spiritual world, but somehow it's there. So in other words, you meditate on that, and that's siddha deha. And then after that, you actually enter into Krishna's pasadena as the second perfect body. And then after that, you have your vastu siddhi. Vastu siddhi means when you take birth in Krishna's pastimes, wherever they're taking place on this earth planet. So these are the general three stages that have been recommended by different devotees, and even by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He talks about this in his Jiva Dharma, which is really interesting. However, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and of course his greatest disciple, Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, they presented something a little differently. For example, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur mentions in Jivadharma and other places about what's called Siddha Pranali. Isn't that interesting? Siddha Pranali means your disciplic succession of siddhas or perfected persons. That's actually what the word means, you know, if you analyze the word, although most people don't know what that means. It means your disciplic succession of realized persons who are so-and-so persons in the spiritual world. You understand what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like saying, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I believe, was Kamala Mandri. So, you know, so you say, this is my disciplic succession, and my spiritual master was so-and-so Mandri, his spiritual master was so-and-so Mandri, his spiritual master was so-and-so Mandri, back to, you know, either Raghunatha Das Goswami, Advaita Parivar, or, you know, some other, it's called a Siddha Pranali. And you write a whole list. In fact, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he had, in his handwriting, we have a copy of his writing, that whole list, of his Siddha Pranali. It's interesting, isn't it? That, of his, you know, who the people were, who his guru. Of course, his initiating guru was Vipini Vihari Goswami, as you probably know. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur actually recognized this whole Siddha Pranali line. It's not that it was Maya or wrong or anything like that. You know, sometimes people think it's illusion or Maya, but with these perfected entities or devotees, then it's actually something that's bona fide. But then you find Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur establishes this, what he calls the Bhagavat Sampradaya. You know, the Sampradaya based upon Siksha. It's interesting, isn't it? The Siksha. And he was actually the first one to start talking about the Siksha Sampradaya rather than the Siddha Pranali Sampradaya. Everybody else talked about, you know, Siddha Pranali. You know, you have to get this from your guru, that he initiates you in your mantra and he tells you what your 11 aspects of your service to Radha Krishna. Yeah, in other words, your name, what dress you wear, saffron dhoti. Anyway, what dress you wear, what your service is, you know, all these other things, these 11 aspects. And that's done in some, you know, the Babaji's do that, and I'm not criticizing the Babaji's. Some of them are bona fide, and some of them may and may not be. And some of them oppose Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they call the anti-party, who criticize them. We don't want to have anything to do with them. And sometimes these Babaji's try to steal people from ISKCON. And you find previous ISKCON devotees living at Radhakund. And Prabhupada said, going to Radhakund is very dangerous because you get influenced by these persons, especially if you're not really realized in devotional service. Because then they start telling you about this whole process of, you know, knowing who your gurus are, what your guru's spiritual identity is, what his guru's spiritual identity, and then you should know your spiritual identity, and then you should start thinking about your spiritual identity and engage in these things. And then, it's interesting, Prabhupada said that would stop the preaching. And I'm seeing you know, Prabhupada's words are extremely wise, because when I see when devotees, nowadays, of course, devotees, what do they say? Fools rush in where angels fear to tread. You ever hear this statement before? Fools rush in where angels fear to tread. Tread means walk. So, in other words, foolish people go into something that is so elevated and, you know, just so much reserved for people who are on a higher platform that, you know, people who are actually unqualified are very fearful of doing it. And for example, let's say we use an ordinary political example. Let's say I'm crazy and I want to see the President of the United States. Now, he also has his servants who can walk in on him at any time, but they have to be very careful. They knock on the door and everything like that. And they have the proper respect, and therefore they're allowed in. But let's say I want to go see him, and I just rush him, push, oh yeah, I got to see the President. Then what happens? No, nobody knows.
Armed forces.
Yeah, I get arrested, shot at, you know, God knows what's going to happen. Even though other people are doing it, it's bona fide to go to see him, if you're properly qualified. But I'm not properly qualified, so therefore I either get shot, arrested, imprisoned, or whatever is going to happen to me. So that's meaning fools rush in where angels fear to tread. That's an interesting, you know, those who were raised in the English-speaking country will know that saying. Fools rush in where angels. So therefore I'm seeing in ISKCON that there's a tendency, you know, more of a tendency now, which Prabhupada said would destroy the preaching, to actually embark on something when people are not really ready for it. I mean, I actually experienced something during Kartik here. We had some other ISKCON devotees living nearby. I'm not going to say who it was or where they were. Anyway, they were living right here, not with me, but, you know, right here in this area. And then every day, you know, they're living in Radhakund, going to Radhakund, enjoying the rest with Radhakund. But at the same time, you know, I was staying here alone and I was cleaning my clothes every day, which I like, you know, taking care of myself, cooking for myself. But nobody offers to serve or help. You know, there's a sannyasi next door. And I actually even asked them, I said, when you go shopping, can you, you know, ask me first so you can buy something for me? And they said, yeah, sure. And nothing happened. So I'm just thinking, if people don't know the ABCs, how can they know the XYZs? But people want to know XYZ without ABC. I mean, if you can't, not that I need anything, you know, I'm happy taking care of myself. I'm not rather like yesterday, I washed my socks, I'm happy. And what the hell, you know? It's easier than depending. But if you don't understand ordinary etiquette, then why are you thinking about anything else at that point? You know, Vaishnava etiquette. And this is, you know, that's what I experienced during Karti. Not to criticize them, but it's just, you know, just Radhakund, Radhakund, Radhi, 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 you know. Then I don't know. You know, are they actually qualified, you know, think like that. But there's a sublimation of material desires that appears to be spiritual. Does everyone know what the word sublimation means? That means you have some material desires, or let's say lust. You know, let's be frank about it. You like to read love stories. You know, you read, what's a good love story in the world? Romeo and Juliet. Romeo and Juliet, that everybody would know. What's another, West Side Story. You know, West Side Story. I mean, you love these love stories. Or you watch some Bollywood movie. You say, oh, love, love, love. And then, but what you do is that, that's, you know, of course that's material, it stimulates your different parts of your brain and other parts of your body in different ways. And then you look at Radha and Krishna. Sublimation means you actually know that that's Maya, but you still have those desires. You know that that's Maya. I mean, it's obvious Maya to go see some love story in the movies, isn't it? I hope it's Maya. But at the same time, you still have in your heart all those lusty desires. I mean, you're not honest, in other words. I'm not finding fault when people have lusty desires in their heart. It's just be honest about it. You know, I'm whatever I am. You know, people are dishonest with themselves. And therefore, what they do is they take up the Radha and Krishna pastimes and meditate on them, and it stimulates the same responses within mentally, physically, and physically even. You know, anyway, I'm not going to get into that. It stimulates, and therefore Prabhupada said, someone will be putrefied rather than purified by hearing about Radha and Krishna if they're not ready for it. And we see that, you know, I see that happening in our movement, you know, and the case in point, what happened during Kartik here. That it's just that, you know, the purification is not going on because they're not ready for it. It's just like if I go to the university to study something, and I go immediately to the postdoctorate level, and I haven't even taken, you know, the initial introductory courses in something. I remember I went to the university. When I went to the university, somehow or other I got advanced placement in some sort of electrical fields. And, you know, I was very good in science and mathematics. You know, it was great. So they put me in an advanced placement course because I did done very well in my previous tests. So I didn't take the preliminary test, and I just got in there, and it was just like, what? What's going on here? So I had to drop the course and go back to the preliminary course. And some of you who have gone to the university may have experienced that too. You know, that so you have to have the prerequisites. Like if you go into university, they'll say, this particular course requires a prerequisite. You see that in the university? A prerequisite, you have to take in this course, and that course. So therefore, it's a great danger to our preaching. Prabhupada got angry with devotees who were reading the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the parts of the Chaitanya Charitamrita that dealt with the intimate loving exchanges of Radha and Krishna, but they were concentrating on that, not reading other things. Mm. And not that you shouldn't read those things, but they were just reading those things. At night they would meet and chant Sri Rupa Manjari Pada, which is Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's favorite Vaishnava song. Remember that. But that's Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So at night they were reading that and chanting that. And so Prabhupada got very angry and he said, they're getting putrefied. Putrefied means, it's the opposite of purified, let's just say. It's when you leave some khichdi overnight for about 3 days, or 10 days, in the hot sun. I mean, we used to do that with our nectar drink after the Sunday feast, deliberately. So we'd become alcoholic. And 3 days later, the brahmacharis would get drunk on the Sunday feast nectar. It would be bubbling and everything like that. The brahmacharis would say, it's prasad! You know, you cannot criticize us. We're drinking maha-prasad. And then rolling on the ground in ecstasy, exhibiting all the different bhavas, the 33 brahmachari bhavas. Being intoxicated. So, anyway, so therefore, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he instituted this Bhagavat Sampradaya. It's interesting, isn't it? Rather than stressing, you don't really hear him talking about the Siddha Pranali, although it's bona fide, and it was bona fide for qualified people, and it still is bona fide for qualified people. You know, he doesn't really mention that. Or maybe once, and Prabhupada mentions it once in his Chaitanya Charitamrita. So you see a whole shift in emphasis from Bhakti Siddhanta. Why is there a shift in emphasis? Because there's a shift in the preaching focus. Previously, the preaching was done pretty much to Gaudiya Vaishnavas. You know, Lord Chaitanya did convert some Buddhists, but it's not that they had Siddha Pranali or anything. They just chant Hare Krishna. Lord Chaitanya converted some Buddhists. And, you know, Haridas Thakur, of course, he was Lord Brahma. He didn't need too much help. He was already on the highest on a high platform, having seen Krishna Vrindavan. You know, so generally they were dealing with people who were already, you know, pretty much attuned to Krishna consciousness. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he did very remarkable things like giving people Brahman threads. Now it's interesting, Brahman threads were not really given to all Vaishnavas previous to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. They were given Yes, at the time when the brahmanas, someone born in a caste brahmin family, was very young, they were given at that time like 7 or 8 or 9 years old. You give it to a boy, and they get the Brahma Gayatri at that time from the Kula Guru or the family guru. You know, the Brahma Gayatri, Om, you know, Om Guru, like that. Like the Gayatri people chant like in Kirtan nowadays. There's groups like that. They chant Kirtan, they join hands, Om.
Yes, you're in yoga groups.
Yeah, very common. Yoga groups do that. But really, you have to be a Brahmin for that mantra to be effective. That's a Brahmin mantra. That's the Brahma Gayatri. I mean, of course, we have our Gaura Gayatris, Guru Gayatris, and stuff like that, Gopal mantras, etc. But so literally, the only devotees in the past, you know, Lord Chaitanya's time, who wore a Brahmin thread, were devotees who were born in Brahmin families. And even when you took sannyas, you gave up your Brahmin thread. Did you know that? You gave up your Brahmin thread. And the women didn't have Brahmin threads. We'll talk about that in a second. But and you even cut your sikh off when you took sannyas. No sikha, no Brahmin thread. And that was the system. And the only people who had Brahmin threads were people born in Brahmin families. Or, you know, at least twice born Kshatriya or Vaishya families. You know, they're also Dvija. The word Dvija refers to bird, because birds are twice born. Once the egg pops out, and then it's born, you know, then the bird pops out of the egg. So it's two births. So Dvija means bird also. So then Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur started giving Brahmin threads to people born in Shudra or low-class families. And there was a rebellion because of that. I mean, there were attempts on his life because of that. That's why people were so upset with him. And then there was that whole discussion at Midnapur about who was superior, Brahmins or Vaishnavas. I mean, this was a major contribution that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati got. Now, why did he give non-Brahmins Brahmin threads? Even though Lord Chaitanya didn't give non-Brahmins Brahmin threads, so that those who were born in non-Brahmin families could preach and be respected. You know, people, a Vaishnava doesn't want to be respected, but for preaching he needs to have that respect. You know, if you walk out in the street like Lord Rishabhdev, naked and everything like that, people won't respect it. It may be great for your spiritual life, but it's going to be horrible for your preaching, especially when you get arrested. Maybe you can open up a prison ministry or something. I mean, here in India, you wouldn't get arrested. You can be a Nagababa. In fact, in Kumbh Mela, some Westerners smeared themselves with ashes so they could smoke marijuana during the Kumbh Mela. Because the police won't arrest Nagababas. The Nagababas are allowed to have unlimited marijuana. So he gave the Brahmin thread. He gave the Brahmin thread for purposes of preaching. Now you may say, why didn't he give women Brahmin threads too? You know, what about us? You know, hey, we want Brahmin threads. Well, the reason is because that wouldn't have helped the preaching. He was dealing with ritualistic Brahminical society, and you know, if he had a bunch of women running around with Brahmin threads, they would have thought we were weird. That's why. He was dealing with a particular culture, not with, you know, something that was transcendental. The culture is not transcendental. So when you're dealing with a particular culture, sometimes you have to adjust different methods of meeting people or even dressing in order to preach Krishna consciousness, isn't it? Like, you see, when Westerners come here, even to Govardhan, and I meet them, I shake their hands. That's a Western cultural item. It has nothing to do with Krishna consciousness. You shake your hands. Even, you know, sometimes the ladies come, you have to shake the lady's hand, even though a sannyasi is not supposed to shake ladies' hands. But if some, you know, lady professor comes here and says, oh, Mr. Swami, I meet Mitra, you go, ooh! It will not be so productive for cultivating this lady professor, right? So therefore, you say, how do you do? I'm Swami. I'm Professor Belinda. You know, and... And then you shake their hand. So in other words, you have to have some cultural adjustment. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura's institution, first of all, the Brahman thread, was a cultural adjustment, not a necessary adjustment. So let's fast forward to the modern time. We're having this whole discussion on whether women can become gurus in ISKCON. You're probably aware of the discussion. And one of the main complaints that people who are, you know, anti-women have is that how can a woman become a guru of a man? How can she give a man a Brahman thread when she doesn't have a Brahman thread? That's one of the main things coming out of a lot of devotees. How can she give a Brahman thread when she... But Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura just considered the Brahman thread basically inconsequential, you know, a preaching tool. Even one time Prabhupada was giving a lecture and the microphone was falling off the stand. And so, you know, Prabhupada didn't have any of the tape like I had last night. So Prabhupada said, I believe it was Tamal Krishnamaraj or someone else, take off your Brahman thread, and there wasn't any string around, you know, take off your Brahman thread and wrap it around the microphone, hold the microphone in place. You've heard that story before? It's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, the Prabhupada said, take it off and wrap it around the microphone. And they go, oh, I'm a Brahman. Prabhupada said, do it, you know. Everyone was shocked when the guy did it. But Prabhupada was showing that, you know, the thread is not the thing. The quality is the thing and the mantra is the thing, not the thread. The thread. So anyway, the Vaishnavas throughout history have chanted the Gayatri Mantra without a thread, men and women. So that whole argument, they come up with so many what we call specious arguments against, like I was corresponding with someone this morning, that's why it's in my mind. Anyway, I was corresponding with someone this morning when another GBC person said, I presented that point that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was concerned with public opinion, you know, making people Krishna conscious. Therefore, he gave people Brahman threads. And then he came back with the argument, so we should be concerned with public opinion and not make women gurus. And then I came back with an argument, guess what public opinion is like nowadays? Even in India, the most popular guru is a lady. And she just goes around hugging people. You know, that's how she makes disciples. Easy way to make disciples, you know.
Shoot.
No fire or sacrifice.
The
hugging
division of ISKCON.
What?
The hugging division of ISKCON.
Yeah, we should have like hugging ladies. But they have to gain some weight first. So anyway, so even culturally, I mean, talk about culturally, you know, what's best for spreading Krishna consciousness, India, and I would say, forget about the Arab countries. I mean, the Arab countries don't even let women drive cars. If they drive cars, they get arrested. And, you know, in certain countries, I just read in the news yesterday that in Afghanistan, the Taliban are becoming more prominent again.
Yeah.
And they're killing women all over the place, and women want to get some education, and throwing some acid in their faces and blinding them. You know, I'm not interested in kowtowing or dealing with public opinion in those countries. But in countries where people are not completely crazy, you know, look, the women are respected, you know, and a woman guru is accepted. In India, I mean, most of the world. In China, they would be accepted. Because you can't even accept Krishna consciousness there. The government is gradually accepting. So you're talking about 90% of the world, or at least most of the civilized world, of course, the world's not really civilized, that's another point. Most of the world that's considered civilized. Or let's say, you know, anyway, whatever. Whatever, you know, most of the world, I hate to use, I can't find a term, you know, civilized, uncivilized, aborigines, the whole world's an aborigine world. In most of the world, you know, if you don't make women gurus, it'll be criticized. Right? Like in Germany, what? If the GBC were to pass a resolution as women can never be gurus, how would it be accepted by the general German populace?
Nobody cares about ISKCON.
No, but if they did care about ISKCON, it would just make them think they were more of a cult, right?
Yeah.
It would actually, what we call, marginalize us even more. I want to speak of in Scandinavia, where they don't even think men should be gurus, just women. You know, Scandinavia is much more liberal than everywhere else. And Scandinavia would be very happy if you pass a resolution, no men should be gurus. But that's a weird part of the world, you know, Scandinavia. But anyway, so the point is that people come up with all these spurious arguments. That's a big word. Spurious means it's illogical. You know, it's just off the subject matter. Why women should not become gurus. But for preaching Krishna consciousness, it's actually essential in the world today. I mean, you find in America the breakup of the Anglican Church. The Anglican Church in America is called Episcopalian. The Episcopalian Church? That's the Anglican Church in America. And so they've broken away from the Anglican Church in the UK. Anglican Church was actually founded by Henry VIII, so we could get a divorce. But that's another issue. So the Anglican Church in America has broken away simply on that issue. So if we really want to become a prominent worldwide movement, then we need to be in tune, without changing the Siddhanta. Siddhanta means conclusion or basic philosophy of Krishna consciousness. We need to be in tune with the rest of the world, with people in general, and not be seen as a marginal sect or cult, which we are seen as right now. You know, so we do have Mayapur Just, not only, you know, the woman guru thing, because that was in my mind, but, you know, sometimes the dress a little bit and different things like that in order to, it's raining again, in order to become a movement which was envisioned by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada and Lord Nityananda as encompassing the whole world. You know, running governments and getting people to chant and introducing the golden age of Lord Chaitanya. I mean, right now, we're just like considered insignificant. I mean, many governments don't even worry about us because we're so small. You know, Prabhupada one time said, if they actually knew what we were doing, they would kill us. But we're so small, even if they know what we want to do, it's just laughable. You know, Hare Krishna said, you know, if you say, we want to take over the world, you know, a bunch of bald people with robes who are chauvinistic, you know. They say, this is funny. You know, they'll probably make a movie about us. And they have made movies about the Hare Krishnas like that. So, you know, we have to learn how to adapt certain things. Like, oops, bring your shoe in. Okay, so everybody bring your shoes and put it by the door. Don't worry about mine.
I mean, the rubber one, I'm not bad.
The rubber one, mine are fine. It's auspicious rain on Lord Nityananda's appearance. It's a rain of mercy. Okay. So, anyway, if we want to fulfill the dreams of the acharyas, we have to take a tack that requires some adjustment. I mean, just like one thing that's become very famous to bring people to Krishna consciousness is this festival of colors that's been instituted all over the world. We started that, actually I didn't start it, but my godbrother Charu Prabhu started in Salt Lake City, Utah. He started this festival of colors, and now they get like, how many people? 10,000 people coming to the temple to celebrate Holi. And they're all chanting Hare Krishna, see the deities, and they're throwing colors at each other. In Germany they do this too. There's actually, not only ISKCON, not ISKCON doesn't do it, because ISKCON's too conservative in Germany. But there are organizations who have a festival of color, non-religious festival of colors, copying what we did in the United States and Germany. You can look it up on the internet. And so, it's interesting how many organizations copy us things that we started, like kirtan, and they understand how to adapt to the time, place, and circumstance, but we're just stuck in an old paradigm. And so we're left behind. Like kirtan, we're not seen as the most prominent kirtan people in the world today. I mean, you got people like Krishnadas and other people like that. I mean, we have a few devotees, you know, do a few little things. And then, you know, we're starting to catch on, but they've actually gone miles ahead of us. You know, they're way ahead of us as far as, you know, being prominent in the kirtan scene. You know, kirtan, vegetarianism, we just got left in the dust. I mean, we were practically one of the first vegetarians groups. But because we were attached to giving people, you know, high fat, what else?
Sugar.
Sugar, salt, and all that other things. People realized after a while vegetarianism should be healthy. So then we got lost in the dust in that vegetarianism thing, isn't it? And we got lost in the dust in the kirtan scene. And now we're getting lost in the dust in the festival of color scene. So, you know, we said we were good at starting things, but because we're too attached to our, let's say, external cultural paradigms, we sort of get lost. This is one of the things we're sort of fixed, you know, in certain rituals and things like that. Prabhupada said in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that an expert acharya or teacher has to be expert in adjusting certain rules and regulations according to time, place, and circumstance. He said what's applicable in India may not be applicable in the West and vice versa. Yeah.
What struck me most in Mukunda Goswami's book was how up to the time was the preaching.
Then.
They did at that time. It was really totally in tune with the time. It was extremely successful. And that completely went out.
Yeah, and now the time has changed.
They were highly creative.
Yeah, time has changed. Even they advertise Krishna consciousness as stay high forever.
Yeah, they had a lot of great slogans, great pictures, and funny ones, which would be considered very authentic now. They like brought up to that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they actually were very much in tune with the times.
Very much.
So, anyway, getting back to Lord Nityananda, I know this is actually related to what is stated here. It says, anyone who engages in the transcendental service of Lord Nityananda immediately achieves the transcendental position on the spiritual platform. That means they realize who they are in the spiritual world. I mean, it's clear as day to me. So Prabhupada and Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur instituted that system of spiritual realization. The Prabhupada directly said that one who engages in the sankirtan preaching is on the same level as the gopis. I mean, there's a letter when Prabhupada wrote that. You know, Ramaswar sort of intuited it, and he wrote to Prabhupada, he said, you know, I've been telling people that, is it right? And Prabhupada said, yes, it's right. That it's actually in the mood of the gopis. You know, so preaching or kirtan like you're doing, you know, any type of spreading Krishna consciousness to people worldwide, under the jurisdiction of Srila Prabhupada, who is Lord Nityananda's dearmost servant, will enable one to realize their transcendental position. I mean, it will actually become very clear. Why is that? Because our transcendental nature is inherent. It's not like some of the Babaji's will say that the soul is non-eternal. That's another subject matter that people are dealing with now. They say the soul is non-eternal. Can you imagine that? Or their definition of eternality is it had a beginning but has no end. You know, understand people define eternal different ways. They say, well, the soul came out of the Maha Vishnu or the Tatashta Shakti. I mean, there's different versions of the same thing. But really, the soul is eternal, and the soul inherently has a relationship, a rasa, with Krishna. Rasa doesn't mean relationship, but a taste for a relationship with Krishna. And it's a process of awakening to that. And of course, when you do awaken, then you verify that with the advanced Vaishnavas, obviously. So you integrate somewhat of the process that Bhaktivinoda was talking about. Somewhat of that process is integrated. That, you know, you're saying, well, I'm really, you know, when you're on the platform of Nishta, which means you're steady in your sadhana, you know, waking up early every morning, chanting rounds, you know, with attention, then you say, well, I really have this attraction to the Tunga Vidya, or something like that. Not attracted to her, but you know, obviously, if you're attracted to her, you're in trouble. But I'm attracted to her service, you know, this mood of her service. And then the guru can help you, or advanced devotees, if the guru's not around, can help you. But that will happen. But you don't have to really do all, or do all the things that are mentioned by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that like that. And it'll happen. The guru will help you understand the 11 aspects of your spiritual personality when it's time. When it's time. Otherwise, it'll destroy the preaching. That's what Prabhupada said. The preaching and the Krishna consciousness. When it's time. But if it's not time, you're in trouble. So it has to be an appropriate time. And I'm seeing now, like I said, fools rush in where angels fear to tread. You know, devotees are just like rushing to Radha Kund. They're bathing in Radha Kund, jumping in Radha Kund. It took me, I mean, I finally took a bath in Radha Kund after 30 years in the Hare Krishna movement. And now I'm actually thinking next time I go to Radha Kund to take a bath, I'm just going to take a load of board over my head. I'm not going to go into the Kund. Because I heard that many of the sadhus do that. Because they don't want to put their feet in the Kund. Because Prabhupada said, the Kund is non-different than Radharani. So I'm thinking next time, I'm not going to go into the Kund. I'm just going to take a load of the Radha Kund water, pour it over me. And that's it. So, in other words, my mood has always been very cautious. And that was Prabhupada's mood. That was Prabhupada's mood too. And I see this mood of caution is actually gradually disappearing. Okay, let's talk about Lord Nityananda. I mean, anyway, these are things all related to this Manakshiksha by Narottama Das Thakur. Manakshiksha means teaching to the mind. Of course, Raghunath Das Goswami, he also has this Manakshiksha, which is very important for devotees to study. And I have that as an audio book, if anyone's interested, of Manakshiksha, Raghunath Das Goswami. Okay, so let's now talk about Lord Nityananda after that brief introduction. Sorry about that. I mean, we've got time. Lord Nityananda's given us time, hasn't he? You know, who can complain? I got you as a captive audience. Now that we got you, now it's raining, thank God. So, okay, let's talk a little philosophy. Stop with the politics and talk philosophy. So let's see who Lord Nityananda is. Lord Nityananda is the original Sankarshan. And actually, Sankarshan means to bring the families together. You know, the Yadu dynasty and... what was the other dynasty's name? These two dynasties. The Yadu dynasty and... Vrishni. To bring them together. That's why he's called Sankarshan, he who brings together. And so, Balaram expands. He's the original expansion of Krishna, obviously. And he expands as the Mahasankarshan, which is the Mahavishnu, Kauranadakshaya Vishnu, Shiradakshaya Vishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and Shesh, Anantashesh. Anantashesh means unlimited. He's unlimited heads. And he's always serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's part of what's called the Chaturvyuha, quadruple expansion of the Lord. There's Vasudev, Sankarshan, Prajuna, and Aniruddha. A little technical there. And Sesh, that is Balaram, always serves. He's always like the most intimate servant of the Lord, serving him, of course, in the friendship mode. But he serves the Lord as his umbrella, because we know that Sesh shields the Lord. You see Lord Vishnu sitting down, and he's lying on the bed of Seshanag. And he's serving the Lord as an umbrella. He serves the Lord as his bed, his Brahman thread, his pillow, his in the temples, the altar, and even the temple is considered to be an expansion of Balaram. That's why we find in the Guru Vashtika that the spiritual master is engaged along with his disciple in cleansing the temple of the Lord. And Prabhupada said, he who cleanses the temple of the Lord is the same as deity worship. Because Anantashesh is the temple. You know, the temple is Anantashesh. So this is an important point to understand. So in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, of course, he served Lord Chaitanya as his older brother. In Lord Ram's pastimes, he served Lord Ram as what? Younger brother. What was his name? Lakshman. Yes, of course. And Lakshman and Lord Ram were inseparable. And he served him so well that during the whole time that they were in exile, he didn't eat. He fasted the whole time. Because Lord Ram never told him to eat. Pretty interesting, isn't it? Don't say the Lord Ram was negligent. Anyway, so somehow or other, he just didn't eat and he stayed awake guarding Ram and Sita all the time. He didn't sleep or eat for all those years. And so then after that was over, Lord Ram said, I'm so pleased with you, I'll give you a benediction. What benediction do you want? And he said, the benediction I want is never to come again as your younger brother. To always come as your older brother. Because I don't want to have to follow all your instructions. So, as of course, there's pastimes with Krishna, and Balaram is the older brother, which I'm not going to tell you now. But as the older brother of Lord Chaitanya, that is Nittai, he didn't always follow Lord Chaitanya's instructions either. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu many times told him to remain in Navadvip preaching and not come to Jagannath Puri on a yearly basis like the other Vaishnavas did. Yet, he did come every year. And he just disobeyed Lord Chaitanya. So, anyway, but that's all right. He's the older brother. See, you wouldn't appreciate that coming from the West, how older brothers have to be served by younger brothers, or even how parents have to be served by children. You know, in the West, we don't have so much of that culture anymore. But in India, it's really interesting. And also, to a certain extent, in Croatia, too, it's like that, too. You're serving the parents. I just got a letter from one of my Croatian disciples. And he was explaining how he's married, and he says his mother threw his wife out of the house. You know, which happens sometimes, you know. His wife is a devotee, his mother threw his wife out of the house. You know, they get, you know, there's competition, jealousy, and rivalry, even in the spiritual world. Of course, that's not the spiritual world, but. So he was explaining that, and he said, but, you know, I can't neglect my parents. I have to keep maintaining them because they need me. And actually, in one sense, they would be all right without them, but still there's that, you know, that understanding, that loyalty to the parents. That even if the parents act in ways that are really not nice, he's still loyal to them. Doesn't live with them. You know, he's living with his wife, obviously. He didn't like pick his parents over his wife. You know, I wrote to him, I said, you know, taking care of your wife is your first priority. And your parents, yeah, you can do that too, but wife should be first priority. So anyway, but you see this all the time, that mother-in-laws throw their daughter-in-laws out of the house. In India, it's very prominent. That's why there, in one sense, there's many widows here. Because the widows, what happens is their husband dies, and then right after that, the mother-in-law looks at this lady who's eating, you know, using up money, and no longer her son is there. She's thinking, you know, what do I have to do with her? She kicks her out of the house. That's one of the biggest reasons you have a lot of widows in Radhakund and everything here. They've been kicked out of the house by the mother-in-law. I'm not suggesting that. Anyway, So anyway, getting back to the pastimes of Lord Nityananda, so he's the older brother of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he appeared in a place called Radha Desh. Radha Desh is a place where the Ganges doesn't flow. And his father's name was Hidayat Pandit, and his mother's name was Padmavati. And his father was so attached to him, incredibly attached to him, that his father couldn't go anywhere without him. It was just like, you know, he'd be in anxiety if he, like, walked three steps behind him. That's how attached his father was. When he was young, his childhood games were not, the Xbox or something like that? You've heard of the Xbox before?
Yes.
You know, or marbles or anything like that. He had all these amazing childhood games. In one game, he played Lord Brahma, and the demigods came to him and prayed for the advent of the Supreme Personality Godhead so the earth could be saved. And another game, they had the game of Vasudev and Devaki getting married. Another game, one of his friends played Putana, and another boy killed her. Not really killed her. Another game, he had the cart demon. One boy played a cart, and the other boy played Krishna, and he kicked the cart demon. The cart demon died. Butter thief games. One game, he danced on the head of one of his friends, making believe the friend was the Kaliya serpent. And another game, they went to the Taliban forest and killed Dana Kusura. Another boy played the part of Dana Kusura. And then, you know, Bakasura, Vatsasura, Govardhan Hill, they played at. He played, you know, the stealing clothes from the gopis. Of course, not that he stole clothes from women, but, you know, the boys, they played like this game. Play of the game of the Kubja. Remember the Kubja story? Kubja was like the lady who, you know, had a bad back, and Krishna straightened her up like that after she offered Krishna the sandalwood pulp that was meant for Kamsa. He played that game. And I did some of the games. He played as a wrestler, wrestling Krishna, you know, in the arena of Kamsa. And then he played in killing Kamsa. And he did the Vamana story, and another boy played Shukracharya. That is Abali Maharaj's so-called guru. he played at building a bridge to Lanka. And then one play he did was a particularly heart-rending. When the Shakti Shila weapon was fired by Indrajit at Lakshman. Remember that story? Shakti Shila weapon? And then Lakshman fell down, you know, practically dying. Of course, this was an ash. He's God. He doesn't die. And then Hanuman had to bring the Amritu Sanjeevani from the Himalayas. So he played like that. He had this whole play. And when he was playing the part of Lakshman, he actually went unconscious, and all the villagers were worried that he was going to die. But then one of his friends remembered that if this happens, you're supposed to be Hanuman and go to the Himalayas, get this Mritu Sanjeevani, and then put it under his nose and then bring him back to life. So in this way, his playing was very, very authentic. And nobody had taught him any of these games. He just like spontaneously knew it. Of course, he's God. He can spontaneously know everything. It's somewhat like Krishna's pastimes. When Krishna was a very young child, Mother Yashoda would tell Krishna the stories about Lord Ram. It's very interesting. And Mother Yashoda, like Krishna would, you know, bedtime stories for little boys. Anyone here have a bedtime story when they were young? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, my mother or grandmother would sit by my bed and tell me Little Red Riding Hood or Goldilocks or something. Some nice story. So Mother Yashoda would be telling Krishna the story about Lord Ram. And when she was telling Krishna the story about Lord Ram, Krishna got into it so much he jumped up on his bed and he started make believe he had a ball. Kill him! Kill that Ravana! And you're like, kill, kill, kill! And your Yashoda mind was thinking, what's happened to my son? But Krishna was actually getting into the mood of Lord Ramchandra. So you see this in many of the incarnations of the Lord, appearances of Krishna. They'll remember their past. And even the gopis, they would remember Krishna's pastimes as Lord Ram and other incarnations. And they would criticize Krishna for them. They would say, Krishna, you were approached by this beautiful young girl, Surpanaka. What did you do? You disfigured her. You're so cruel. You know Surpanaka? Mm-hmm. Ravana's sister? You cut off her nose and her ears. You're so cruel. And so they would go down, and Krishna, you appeared as Lord Vamana. And you cheated Bali Maharaj. You're just a cheater. So they would use these previous incarnations as an excuse to criticize Krishna. You're taking them in a negative way. But it was all done in the humor of anger. The man, you know, the man of the gopis, or the man of the anger of the gopis. So anyway, so this way, Lord Nityananda remembered all these things. And then he remained 12 years at his home. Then this sannyasi came to his home, and his father took care, Hadai Panda took care of the sannyasi. In those days, when a sannyasi came to your home, you had to give a sannyasi anything he wanted. Just like when Vishwamitra Muni came to Dasarath's palace, and he asked for Lord Ram, Dasarath eventually, in the beginning he didn't want to do it, but eventually he had to give in, right? So that's the tradition. Nowadays they don't follow that. Mm. You go to Rahat's home and you ask for something to eat, and they said, you know, cook it yourself. Sometimes it happens like that. Or you don't get invited. I mean, I've had instances in America, I say to Grahas, to disciples, you know, when are you going to invite me over for dinner? I say, sometime, Maharaj. And it never happens. So, this is life in the material world, in the sannyasi. It's not like traditional sannyasi. Anyway, so the sannyasi came to Lord Nityananda's home, and he saw Nityananda, and he said to Hridaya Pandit, I have problems, I don't have an assistant. I need a brahmachari assistant. Would you be so kind to give me your son? Prabhupada also did a similar thing. He would go to many people's homes and say, you know, you have two or three sons, just give me one. And nobody would do it. You see, the Kali Yuga was even an influence in society when Prabhupada was trying to preach in India. So, anyway, Hridaya Pandit, he was a cultured man, so he, in spite of his attachment for Lord Nityananda, he gave Lord Nityananda to the sannyasi, and then Lord Nityananda wandered off. 12 years of age, he wandered off. Shortly after that, Lord Nityananda went to all the places of pilgrimage, like Gaya, Vrindavan. He was here in Vrindavan, Hastinapur, Dwarka, Ayodhya, Parvati's abode. Parvati actually cooked for him. Lord Shiva's wife cooked for him, Bhadari Gashram, where Vyasadeva and his wife took care of him. It's nice. And then he actually interacted with some Buddhists. So he asked the Buddhists some questions, you know, he wanted to defeat them. And the Buddhists were just, you know, they couldn't defeat Lord Nityananda. So Lord Nityananda got so angry with them because the Buddhists didn't answer his question, he started to kick them. That was just pretty, well, that's pretty nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm being kicked by the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda. I mean, kick me any day, Lord Nityananda. And so, and then also he met Madhavendra Puri. And they both fainted. And actually it's considered that Lord Nityananda is like a disciple of Madhavendra Puri. And they both cried for many days and nights when they met each other. And then he went to Jagannath Puri, and he saw Lord Jagannath with four arms. You know, he actually had that vision. And then he went back to Vrindavan, to the place that we're going to see today, which is called Nityananda Baitak, which means Lord Nityananda's sitting place, which is very special place on near Radhakund. And they're having a festival there today. Actually, they're having a festival this morning. We can't go in the morning because they won't let women in the morning. It's unfortunate. Last year I went with some devotees and there's some ladies and I said, you know, we want to come to the festival. And they said, no, only men. I said, you come in, Maharaj, come. I said, I'm not going there without these devotees. I mean, Lord Nityananda was merciful. Yeah, I mean, he's so merciful. He had a wife, an Angamandri, which is his wife's, you know, constitutional position. And Lord Nityananda is sometimes considered to be an Angamandri in Krishna's pastimes too. Anyway, so anyway, getting back to the story. So we'll go today to see Lord Nityananda's sitting place. So he sat there and chanted. I'm sure he walked around a little bit too. But he sat there and chanted, waiting for Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to appear. And one day, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began, not only to appear, but Lord Chaitanya to exhibit his pastimes as a devotee. Because Lord Chaitanya, when he first appeared, and he had his scholarship pastimes, nobody knew he was a devotee. You know, there were one or two people who knew he was Krishna. Like the Brahmin whose sweet rice he stole. I mean, they knew he was Krishna, but they kept it secret. Because he told them, if you break this secret, then you're going to die. So that's a pretty good threat. So I should ask devotees to have the same sort of tendency to keep secrets. You know, when I tell this is a secret. Now I know if I tell someone a secret, it gets spread all over the movement within about 3 days through the internet. There's no secrets anymore, isn't it? I have not experienced secrets in this country. So when Lord Chaitanya finally began his pastimes as a preacher after he took initiation from Ishvara Puri, then Lord Nityananda roared, as described, like a lion. He was there in this Nichananda Baitak where Lord Nichananda sat, and he just roared, and everyone in Radhakund area was shocked. You know, why is he roaring like a lion? And it was because Lord Chaitanya was enacting his pastimes. And then Lord Nichananda came, this is a story that's told very well by Jatavata Maharaj. He came to Navadvip to see Lord Chaitanya, but he sort of hid in someone's house, Nandanacharya's house, one of the devotees of Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya said to the devotees, last night I had a dream, and this brilliant personality, Balaram, was coming and said, I'm your brother, and he's come to Navadvip, so try to find him. So everyone looked around, they couldn't find Lord Nichananda. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Lord Nichananda is a very special personality, you're not going to be able to find him yourself. So he led everybody to Nandanacharya's house. And they both embraced when they saw each other. And they revived their constitutional relationship, you know, as brothers. And they preached Krishna consciousness together. There's many famous stories of Lord Nichananda's activities in Navadvip. Lord Nichananda, this is actually interesting, we know the story that Srivastava's son died in the middle of Kirtan.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell that story, but his son died, and then Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, because you didn't disturb the Kirtan, myself, that is Lord Chaitanya, and Nichananda will become your sons. So from that point onwards, Lord Nichananda would go over to Srivas Thakur's house, and Malini, who was Srivas Thakur's wife, would treat him like her son, even though he was a grown man, like 7 feet tall. And she would put him on his lap, on her lap, and she would breastfeed him. You know, they were both adults. You know, Srivas Thakur was older than Lord Chaitanya. You know, he was senior to Lord Chaitanya, probably old enough to be Lord Chaitanya's father. He wasn't contemporary with Lord. He was contemporary meaning the same time, but he wasn't the same age. So you hear that you have this older woman and Lord Nichananda, and he's sitting on her lap. And she's hand-feeding him too, you know. Like you saw her here with Keshav. You know, little Keshav who was just here, he was hand-fed by his father and his mother. And so can you imagine? You know, it'd be like one of you ladies put Jagat Guru in your lap and hand feed him or something like that. And so they had that relation. Lord Nichananda was called the Avadut. Mm-hmm. Avadut literally means wind. So the wind doesn't have any rules and regulations. It just goes there. You can't say to the wind, you're not allowed in here.
Right.
Because the wind is just like all over the place, upside down, backwards. Like we experienced this morning, a lot of wind blowing things over. So then he had that relationship with Malini. And one interesting story is that one time Lord Nichananda and Malini were in the house, and a crow picked up her ghee pot and flew away with it. And she was in anxiety because Srivas Thakur had a bad temper. She had a husband who had a bad temper. I mean, there's several stories about that. And no, he didn't hate her, but he just got angry. You know, he got really angry. He even told, when his son died, he told his wife that if you keep crying during Lord Chaitanya's kirtan, I'm going to give you something to cry about. You know, heavy stuff, you know. Anyway, can't criticize him. So she was very worried when the ghee pot was stolen away, and Lord Nichananda said, what are you worried about? And she said, a crow has stolen the ghee pot, and then Lord Nichananda said to the crow, bring it back. And the crow flew by back and brought it back. And Lord Chaitanya tested Srivas Thakur. He said, you have this like really weird person coming over your house. You know, this is Avadut. Nobody knows what his, you know, what his caste is, and he acts so weird. You know, just kick him out of your house. And Lord Nichananda, Srivas Thakur said in reply, that even if I see Lord Nichananda enter a liquor store, or even if he marries a Muslim girl, I will not be dissuaded from my conviction that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there are many, many stories. I don't need to tell them all. There's Jagai Madai's story. And actually, the final story I'll tell about Lord Nichananda is Lord Nichananda and the Dacoits, which is a famous story. Once upon a time, Lord Nityananda came to Navadweep, and this was when Lord Chaitanya was in Janakpuri, but he was preaching. And Lord Nityananda, not being your ordinary sannyasi, was dressed in all sorts of finery, like earrings and jewelry, like that, bracelets. He had bracelets. Like, it's interesting, here the married woman is supposed to have a lot of bracelets on each arm. And if you don't, they'll criticize you and say, "You're married, but where are your bracelets?" The bracelets rattle. I guess they tell your husband you're coming. So you know she's there and you can behave yourself. You know, turn off your computer, whatever. So, Lord Nityananda had all these bracelets, earrings, ankle bells, and they were all like gold and diamonds and jewels. So these thieves, they were looking at that and thinking, "Wow, let's steal them from Lord Nityananda, from this avadut, this crazy person." So what happened is they found where Lord Nityananda was having his kirtan at night, and they remained. They had a whole plan. They worshipped the goddess Chandi Durga, and they had all planned to steal all these ornaments. So they came out at night, just waiting for everybody to fall asleep after the kirtan, and they fell asleep. And they woke up the next morning and said, "Oh, we didn't worship properly the goddess Chandi. So then let's come back the next day." So they came back the next day and found these like 10-foot Vaikuntha guards guarding Lord Nityananda's house. And they said, "We got to wait a few weeks until these guys go away. Some important person must be visiting Lord Nityananda. So, you know, when he goes away, we'll be able to steal." So they waited a few weeks and then came back a third time. And this time, it started raining basically pus and thorns and whatever from the sky. And they were falling into all the stool ditches and the leeches were eating them away. There's a whole story in Chaitanya Bhagavata about this. And they were just like, you're blinded. And then they realized they had made a mistake. It took them a few times. And then the leader of the dacoits went to Lord Nityananda and begged for forgiveness and surrendered. Lord Nityananda became a pure devotee of the Lord. Pretty good, isn't it? So when you're dealing with Lord Nityananda, if you apologize, you can become a pure devotee like that. Lord Chaitanya takes a little longer. But with Lord Nityananda, so you see how merciful Lord Nityananda is. And of course, the Jagaya and Madai story, so many nice stories about Lord Nityananda's mercy. So it says here, by approaching Lord Nityananda, you become, let me get to this point. Unless one takes shelter under the shade of the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda, it will be very difficult to approach Radha and Krishna. When you achieve, here's another one, when you achieve the mercy of Lord Nityananda, then you will be able to approach Radha and Krishna. So it's interesting. In other words, it's essential to approaching Radha Krishna. So the Acharyas say that first we approach Lord Nityananda, who is the original guru, Adi Guru, and then he frees us from material desires and we become stable and steady in devotional service. Then we can approach Lord Chaitanya to come to the ecstatic platform. And then finally we become worthy to approach the six Goswamis of Vrindavan to understand Radha and Krishna. So this is the instruction of the Acharyas. First Lord Nityananda. And Lord Nityananda is always going around preaching Krishna consciousness. I mean, that's Lord Chaitanya sent him on that duty, along with Haridas Thakur, to preach to all the Jagais and Madhais, right? So first Lord Nityananda, then we become able to approach Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then we become able to approach the six Goswamis. And then we can learn about Radha and Krishna. So, okay, it's a long class today. For me, I don't like long classes. Anyway, some people do 3 or 4 hour classes. I don't like them. It's too much. I try to squeeze as much as I can into a short time. You see, I speak very quickly. Because my mind goes very quickly. And you see, sometimes if I make like a little mistake, I catch myself because my mind is going quicker than the speaking. You understand? Yeah. And sometimes I have to come back, "Hey, what did I say?" So that's the reason, you know, I'll say sometimes something a little funny then I remember what I said. Because the mind, somehow or other, my mind is on overdrive all the time. So any questions?
Yeah. How many times, Lord, can Ananda stayed at Radhakund.
Twice. Once he came first to Vrindavan, then he went on his pilgrimage, and then he came back.
Yeah, when he came back, how long?
How long a period of time? I don't really know. It's not mentioned by the Acharyas. It was several years.
Several years.
It was several years. Several years, yeah.
Yeah, I remember we were there with the Dinamadi Club a few years ago. And then I remember he said like some amount of years.
Yeah, some amount of years he stayed there. It wasn't just like stay there for a few minutes. Yeah. He stayed and chanted in the banks of Radhakund for a long time. Because he was remembering his previous pastimes as Balaram. You know, and incidentally, the Radhakund is not just for the gopis. The coward boys have their kunjas around Radhakund area, Radhakund and Shyamakund. If you look at the diagrams of Radhakund and Shyamakund, there's actually, you know, a place for Subal, Srinam, not only for Lita and Vishaka and Tungavidya and jewel bridges, but there's also coward boy kunjas around kunds around Radhakund. Now a lot of this area has been turned into a development project. You know, they've been building houses there. It should have been left completely untouched, and they should have renovated the original kunds. They're actually coward boy kunds there too. And of course there's the Astasaki kunds. There's all sorts of kunds around there that really are not remembered or recognized nowadays. But it was several years he remembered. Yeah, because he remembered his previous pastimes. I mean, obviously, Lord Nityananda doesn't have amnesia, but under the influence of yoga maya, it appears that he forgets. It appears that Krishna forgets sometimes. It's nice. So, where we're going today is where Lord Nityananda resided for a long period of time.
Wow.
Perhaps longer than anywhere else.
Yeah. Except for in the place
of Ekachakra. Oh, yeah, I mean, that was 12 years. Ekachakra is very important too. But, you know, this is actually one of the most important places of Lord Nityananda's pastimes, is a sitting place at that point. It's unfortunate they keep ladies there. I mean, only during the festival this afternoon the ladies will be able to go. It's only when they're having the festival, it's a bunch of sannyasis sitting there. You know, I thought ladies go in anyway, but they didn't have the courage. And I think we would have gotten in trouble. Imagine just like some Western ladies. We're Western ladies, and we couldn't be prouder. And if you don't like, we're going to chant a little louder. You know, I think would have freaked out the sannyasis, the poor sannyasis. But, you know, Lord Nityananda was merciful to everyone. He didn't discriminate. I mean, look at sitting in Malini's lap, you know, it's pretty avant-garde, you know. Not that no one should imitate. I mean, that's only Lord Nityananda can do those things. Not you, not me, not any of us. All right, any other questions or comments? So today we're going to have the rest of the morning, I guess we can chant Japa, Hare Krishna. I think you all know how to do that. Japa. And at 12, we can have some nice khichdi. It's for singing and everything great. To break the fast, and tonight we'll have dinner too, but I'm just going to take fruit and take. And then I guess about 2 we can go out, depending on the weather, but it looks like it's starting to clear up. Depending on the weather, we'll go out and we'll start the Harinam. Have an amplifier, you know, a wireless microphone and everything like that, and wheels for the amplifier. So we can have a nice Harinam. Begin with Uddhava Kund. And then that should be exciting, isn't it, for Lord Nityananda? Because look, that's the best way to celebrate. You have a Harinam, Radhakund, and Radhakund should be pretty crowded because it's... Yeah, so Krishna had us made...
Nityananda changed your whole plan.
He changed my plan. Okay, I made one plan, Lord Nityananda made another plan.
I'm so thankful.
Yeah, this is much better. Much better we had the class this morning, too, because we wouldn't have been able to speak so long about all these things in the night. In the evening, because I wouldn't get tired or something like that. And then also, when we go to, I'm going to turn off my recording.